All right, well, turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Proverbs chapter 7. Book of Proverbs in chapter 7. And Lord willing, we'll look at the whole chapter tonight. This is a kind of the last few messages have really been on kind of this theme of purity and adultery and some things like that. And so this is kind of Solomon will address it more along the way, but this is one of the final big chunks where he's talking about this, and it's a little bit more direct, probably the most direct passage on this in Scripture as far as just painting a picture almost of the situation. And so we're going to read the chapter tonight, and then I know we got my kids in here and everything, so we want to be very tactful as we go through, but this is very, very important, and it's very important that everyone, no matter how young they are, understands this area, and at least to be careful as they learn along the way. This is a path to avoid, okay, from Proverbs chapter 7. So let's look here. Proverbs chapter 7, beginning here in verse 1. Solomon says, "My son, keep my words, and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, and from the stranger which flattereth with her words." And then he begins his story here, verse 6. He says, "For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths, a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him," and here are her words, verse 14, "I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works and fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves, for the good man is not at home. He has gone a long journey, and hath taken a bag of money with him, and will come home at the day appointed." With her much fair speech she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips she forced him. He goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths. For she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death." So we're going to call this tonight a horror story from Solomon. All right, a horror story from Solomon. Now, I have never really been into horror movies, okay? I found it kind of funny because if you look at the category of horror movies back, you know, maybe back in the 40s and 50s, it's funny because the scariest thing, that there was a time where the scariest thing that people could come up with was robots. Do y'all remember seeing those? It'd be like a robot. That would be the scary creature. He'd come out and he'd be like googly eyes and weird slinky arms. He'd come out and people would be freaked out and they would scream and run away from the scary robots. And I don't find, and they would look horrible. They'd be like a box with obviously a man in it, you know, walking around like this, and people would scream and run away. Just bizarre. But I've never really been into these horror type movies, and that may be because I'm just a strong moral holy person, a man of the cloth. Or maybe it's because I'm a scaredy cat and I just can't handle it. I think that's probably more like what it is. I remembered early on in our marriage when Heather and I had just started working in Ohio. We were staying in a church parsonage at the time. And it was late at night, about midnight or so, a dark and stormy night, put it that way. And Heather woke me up. She said, "Noah, someone's in our house." I'm like, "Oh, you got to be kidding me." And I listened, and I could hear them downstairs walking through our house. I'm like, "Oh, you've got to be kidding me." I'm like, "What am I supposed to do?" You know. So I'm thinking, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to call 911. That's what you're supposed to do, okay? And just be done. But no, I'm going to be strong for my wife. I have just married her. I need to assure her that I'm able to take care of her in sickness and in health and scary, murderous robbers. And so I didn't own a gun at the time, but for some reason I had Caleb's Glock. I don't know why it's there in my, I shouldn't have had it. I would have hurt somebody. But I take this gun and I start walking through the house downstairs. And this guy's good because everywhere I go, I can't find him. It's like, you can hear stuff moving, and I'm thinking, I am going to kill something. I mean, if it's a teenager pulling a prank, I'm going to kill him. And I can't. And later I told the teenagers, I said, "If you want to do pranks, that's great, but don't come into my house at night because I'll probably shoot you without thinking about it. So don't do that." But anyway, so I'm walking around. I'm thinking, I can't find this. I'm so scared. It's stupid. I'm walking around and I'm hearing this. And so finally I go upstairs. I'm looking upstairs like, maybe he's come upstairs. This is terrible. And I'm looking through. There's nothing. And I look outside of one of the bedroom windows, and outside of the window, there's a tree branch hitting against the window. It sounds just like someone walking through there. Now, if I hadn't been so scared, I would have shot the branch, just to be mean, right there. That was crazy. But you know what? Those feelings of terror, you don't forget those, do you? And if you've ever been terrified, right now, you can remember how you felt in that moment. And it just paralyzes you, and it's scary, and it's awful. And that's kind of what Solomon is doing here. Solomon has given some textbook instruction about purity back in chapter 5, about adultery back in chapter 6. But now he wants to give a vivid picture of how this works, and he does. And he paints a picture. I mean, if it was today, he might have showed a movie. I don't know, because he is showing this as clearly as it can. He's saying, "Look, here's how this works," and he is explaining to his son very vividly this scenario. But before he gets into it, we have the first 5 verses, and I'm not going to get into it a whole lot because we've already heard this so many times. He says, "My son, listen to me. My son, listen. Jack, listen." No, he says, "My son, just listen to what I have to say." And he's saying that over and over. He's saying, if you'll hang on to my commandments, you'll live. If you'll keep my laws, the apple of your eye, meaning like the pupil of your eye, if you'll take this stuff and just glue it to your face, you know, just get that. If you hang on to this, it will help you. He says, you need to tie them to your fingers. You need to write them on your heart. You need to be related to it. You need to make it your sister. I mean, he's just coming up with whatever he can to say, these instructions are absolutely critical. But then he continues here and says, listen, the reason why you need to hang on to these things, and these things in particular, verse 5, is because it's going to keep you from the strange woman. It's going to keep you from this area of temptation. Now, obviously, here's Solomon talking to his son. This is not a gender-specific issue. This crosses for men and for women. But his scenario here is, of course, for his son. But sexual sin is what he's referring to here. And he says, listen, this will keep you from that because it is a temptation that you will face. That's what we talked about last week. It's like training kids in the panhandle about tornadoes. It's going to happen. You're going to be in a thunderstorm. There's going to be hail. You're going to be in a tornado at some point. So you need to know how to take care of it. And he says, listen, you're going to face this temptation. And then he kind of hits play and says, here's how it works. And he gives a scenario. Now, this probably happened because he's saying, look, I was in my house. In verse 6, I looked out my window, probably second or third floor, and he could look down. And he says, I watched this happen. Okay. Now, he may be making it up, or he may be telling the story, whatever, but he said, look, this is how it works out. Let me tell you what I saw, and he explains this, kind of gives a bird's eye view of his perspective for his son. Now, I don't want to read a whole bunch into this, okay, but I do want to just point out here that what Solomon is saying is this vantage point from up here looking down, he's saying, from up here, I could see this whole thing play out, okay? Now, the kid in this story is clueless. He's hoodwinked. He's taken for a fool because he is. But the dad is up there. From wisdom's perspective, it's very clear what's going on. It's very clear. And so if you can look at this from wisdom's vantage point, then it will help you. And that's what he's saying. He says, look, this will help you. And if you have, if you're here tonight and you have any influence over the next generation or the one after that or whatever, okay, then we need to make sure that that those who we can influence can see this from our perspective. Because these are problems that kids are facing today and that they will continue to face as long as there is humanity, there will be this problem. And so this is something that we can help people see from wisdom's perspective. Here's how it works. Don't just say, he didn't just say, hey, stay away from bad girls. That would have been one verse. It could have been easy and he would have been done. But we need more instruction than that. And so here he says, here's exactly how this works. He says, look, here's the person. And here's what happens. So kind of three different acts here. So act one, we have the gullible encounters the seductress. Okay? So here he is. Here's our victim. He's hopelessly foolish. Verse 7, I beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths, a young man void of understanding. So here's this kid. He's hanging around simple people. Now, when we first started this out, the series in Proverbs, we had our simple Simon was down here. Remember that? Remember that Simon? We had simple Simon. We had our young buck, okay? And then we had our wise, experienced young man, Brother Tom, okay? And so we had those three groups of people here. Now, the simple, it doesn't mean that they've made awful choices. It just means that there's a lot of room in their mind for their brain to grow. Yeah, put it that way, okay? So they've got a lot of room to go. They've got a lot of experience that they can develop and things like that. They haven't made a lot of mistakes, but they haven't made a lot of good choices either. They're just kind of a blank slate. And he says, listen, here's a person who's very simple. They don't have a whole lot going on upstairs, okay? And they're hanging out with people that are also uneducated. Or maybe they've been educated, but they didn't receive the instruction. Either way, their mind is void. He says he's void of understanding. The word understanding there it refers to the heart, the command center of the life. He says his command center is there, but there's nobody sitting at the desk. Okay? So like the wheel's turning, but the hamster's dead. Or the elevator doesn't go all the way up to the top floor. Or he's not the sharpest crayon in the box. I started to write one about a Dairy Queen Blizzard, but I couldn't think of anything, so whatever. He's a Dairy Queen Blizzard. Anyway, so he's just not all there, okay? He said, so that's the kid. He's gullible. Anything could happen to him, okay? And he says here that in verse 8 that he's passing through the street near her corner. Now, that word passing, I looked it up, and I don't know how to say Hebrew words, but it's a word that refers to someone kind of ceremoniously walking. Like they're just kind of, oh, like with their nose in the air and their chest stuck out, and they're just kind of, because that's what kids do, right? I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot going on up here. He's around his friends. He's trying to be something. He doesn't really know what because he doesn't have a lot going on up here. So he's just kind of cocky, kind of confident, and just trying to work through. So there's this clueless, cocky kid who's just walking through the street here, and it says he's walking through the street near her house. He's not going to her house. In fact, he probably doesn't even know who she is or where she lives. He's just going, and here we are, and he's just kind of bobbing through. So here's this kid. He's hopelessly foolish, but the atmosphere here, he kind of sets the scene. Look in verse 9, this ominous atmosphere. He says, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black in dark night. Now, I don't know how many more words you could cram into that sentence to make it sound scary, but it's scary. It's dark. Something is going to happen. Things always happen when it's bad in the dark, right? I mean, that's just a key for horror movies. Now, I realized as I was going through my notes here that I've probably been slowly telling my life story through illustrations. It's the only life I know. So I'm going to bore you with one more illustration from my paramedic training. I told you we went through our second phase training and we learned different skills, high angle rescue and some things like that. But one of the things that we learned that I never used ever is underwater search and recovery. So they trained us to use scuba gear, which was fun. That's the only reason I took it, because it was fun. We never used it, but they teach you how to go underwater and how, you know, if somebody loses something, you have to find it. That's what we did. We did search and rescue. But this would be in the water. So everything changes whenever you're in the water. Most of our dives that we did were there on campus. They had a big lake, and it was just a dark murky East Texas lake. Okay, just slimy, gross. It wasn't a place to be. It wasn't like when you go on these cruises and it's clear and you can see a mile and there's beautiful fish. It's not like that. This is dark, muddy stuff, and it's so dark and murky and it's scary. I don't think I've ever been so scared in my life. Okay, even when I was a newly married guy chasing sticks through the house, I still was more scared here. Okay, this is because it's dark. You're there. You're looking through a mask, so it's, you know, your goggles already give you tunnel vision. Okay, you're breathing canned air, and you're everything's in slow motion because you're underwater and you can't see. And we had lights. But a light in that water, it literally looks like a lightsaber, okay? It just shines because it doesn't shine this way. It just shines right where the light is. So you can see, but you can't see anywhere except for right where that light is. And as we would, without fail, we'd be driving through, and about the time that I about can't take it anymore, something swims by. Now, they're called fish. But in there, they're not fish. It's the Loch Ness Monster, and it's coming after you. You know, I mean, it is the scariest thing. I would not make it as an underwater diver. And what we heard stories from the guys who actually do this for a living, who actually go and look for things, often these teams are used to find bodies in the water where someone throws a victim, you know, they kill someone and throw them in the lake, or they just jump off the bridge and whatever, and they sweep the lake. Well, sweep the lake often means these divers are down finding them. And one of the guys said, when you're down there, you don't find the dead bodies. The dead bodies find you. Okay, so now we're all going to have nightmares, because that's what I thought too. I was like, yeah, and it makes sense. You know, there's no way. It's black. It's dark. You can't, something exciting is going to happen, I guess, if you like that thing. That's what happens right here. Solomon is setting the scene. He says, here's this kid. This is a horror movie. Here's a kid. He's clueless. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he's just kind of bobbing down near her street. And it's dark. It's like if you could just yell out at this kid, you say, kid, you don't even have to know anything to know. This is not good. Get out. Like if you see him on the screen, you know, they're just kind of walking around. The music is tense. You know the boogeyman is going to jump out. And you say, run, get out of there. And that's what he's saying. Look, this is so clearly obvious. This is exactly that this is a problem. Get out of there right now. And that's exactly how sexual temptation works. People are, you know, their mind's in neutral, it's dark, it's night, you know, you're there, you're alone, you've got the TV or the computer or your phone or whatever it is, and you know, or with a person that you've had kind of a secret admiration for and no one else is home, and it's a black and dark night, that's the opportunity. And so get ready for a monster. And here she comes in verse 10. Behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot. The seductress makes her move. And Solomon puts this word, it's like, and behold, like, what do you know? She's so, of course, I mean, you know, it's been set up. Of course she's going to show up. And here we go. It's kind of a little bit of sarcasm there. He's like, behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot. And so here she comes, and this is her turf. It's her corner. This kid's walking around with a kick me sign on the back of his shirt, and what do you know? Here she is, and so she comes. We know that she's another man's wife. This isn't just a streetwalker. It's not just a prostitute, but it says here that she's dressed like one. She has the attire of an harlot. She makes herself look like whatever she needs to in order to get whatever it is that she's hunting for. Okay, that's basically how she's worked. She's a hunter, and that's exactly what she's doing. She'll play whatever angle it does, whatever angle it takes to bag her victim. It's just like a hunter that goes out in the woods and it's deer season, and he just sprays himself with all kinds of stuff. It may be doe urine, it may be fox urine, it may be his dog's urine, any kind of urine. He just gets all over himself and then goes out there hoping that a deer will walk by and say, what's that? And no matter what she thinks it is, as long as she comes, then he'll go for it, right? And that's what she does. She dresses like whatever it takes for whoever she might get. And here she is. She meets this guy. And it says also here she's subtle. She's subtle of heart. Now, every move that she makes has been strategically planned. That subtlety is like what Satan used in the Garden of Eden. Very deliberate. very strategic. And that's what happens. She's very strategic. And the father that's telling the story, in verse 11, we see some parentheses, and he actually gives us some more insight. Because remember, he's looking from wisdom's perspective. And he can see what's going on even underneath the scene. She's dressed like a harlot. To this kid, she may as well be wearing camouflage. He can't see anything of what's going on. But the father not only sees what she's doing, he can see why, and he can detect some of the things in her actions to figure out even more about her. Look at verse 11. It says here, she's loud and stubborn, and her feet abide not in her house. He says her volume. Now, that doesn't mean that any loud person is bad, okay, because some people tend to be that way. I tend to be that way, okay. My mom constantly says, will you stop yelling at me? I understand that that's how it works. But here, her volume and the way that she talks is telling. It's like one commentator said, it's like the rustling of the trees or the rolling of the thunder. You can hear it. There's a certain thing that you can just tell. Something is about to happen. It's like the Indians that would hear the buffalo coming on the plain. You could hear that. You could feel it. Something's happening. He says, listen, I can just tell by what she's saying. I can tell by her tone. I can tell by her stubbornness. I can tell by what's going on. This is very bad. It says that she's everywhere. It says her feet abide not in her house. She lieth in wait at every corner. I skipped a line there. Now is she without. Now is she in the street. She's everywhere. And the point here is that wherever she meets this kid, or wherever she meets her victim, whoever her victim is, wherever she finds them, she's on her home turf because she's been everywhere. So wherever she finds you, she has the advantage. She has the home field advantage everywhere she goes because she's been everywhere. And so here she is. She's making her move. And so she catches him, verse 13. And just very shocking. I mean, she grabs him and kisses him. And it says here, with an impudent face, begins to talk to him. And so now the character kind of changes. The scene begins to change to the hunt. And we see the hunt begin here. But before we do that, just want to mention here that the seductress, or that type of person, is still after the gullible. The game continues to be played today, doesn't it? It still happens. It's in our world today, everywhere that we go. And the gullible, they take the form of young men and young women, often just drifting through life, not thinking, simple, not engaged. Not that we need to be fearful of everyone, everywhere that we go, but we should be able to recognize a predator when we see it. And that's what Solomon is giving this warning. And that is why he's giving this warning. But the truth is that kids aren't the only ones that face this, are they? It's not just young men and young women. It's old men and old women and everyone in between, right? I mean, every one of us can face these types of temptations. Every one of us could find ourselves wearing the shoes of the clueless kid just walking down near her corner, browsing the internet near her site. I'm not going to those sites. I'm just kind of looking around. Well, there's ways. I mean, you know, you kind of wander near those places, and we just feign cluelessness. Well, I didn't know that was going to pop up. And it's amazing how we can fool ourselves, isn't it? You can do that. You can be up late at night. I can't sleep. I'm just going to see what's on TV. Well, what do we think is going to be on TV late at night? I mean, you know, those are the things that happen often. I'm not saying it's the only thing. I'm just saying we need to think about these things. Looking through the movies on Netflix and going through, it's like, oh, well, maybe, you know, and, you know, I'll watch a James Bond movie or something. Well, you realize every single James Bond movie has sexually charged things in it. Right now, I love James Bond movies, but if you just watch them and think, well, I didn't know that scene was there. That scene is going to be there, and I enjoy the action of those things, but you can't watch those things and then be shocked when something happens like you didn't know that was going to happen, right? I mean, that's now there are ways to find out and to say, okay, there's going to be a scene here I'm going to skip. Or, in fact, we even found out here a month or so ago, there's ways of renting these movies where they take those scenes out, and that's awesome, okay? And there's ways around those things. But when we just watch something and say, well, I'll just see. If it's bad, I'll turn it off. Well, there's a reason why it's bad, and we need to be careful about those things. We need to be, have our brains turned on and not act like a teenage kid here. I'm sorry, Colton, but we need to not act like a kid here that is described as just kind of drifting around. Sometimes we take on the persona of that person, don't we? And we just kind of drift into things, and then we're shocked when, behold, there is a scene that's sexually charged, or there's a thing here that I didn't know that was going to be there. Well, you know, they're rated R for a reason, or sometimes not even R, and we need to be careful about those things. We need to be vigilant about those things. He's explaining this because when a person feigns innocence and wanders right near her path, well, she's going to come out. That's exactly how this works. We live in an age where we don't have to go out near her corner. Her corner comes to us in the form of screens of every type. I mean, it's there. It's very, very easy. You're saying, get rid of all technology? Well, sometimes that wouldn't be a bad idea. But the Father's not just saying, get rid of all people. You should never encounter these people. The Father knew this person. He'd encountered her before. He says, look, I know who this person is. He's seen her before. And he's been able to see through her tactics. Because he has some intelligence on her plans. Because he's wise. If you're wise, you can avoid most of these encounters. And when you do encounter her, you won't be deceived by her. You won't be taken by her because you'll know how it works. But unfortunately for this young man, this is just the beginning. So she begins her attack. Verse 14, she begins feigning some innocence. She says, hey, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I've found thee. Now, this is interesting. She presents herself in innocence. And what she's doing here, and I had to study this out because it doesn't make any sense. Peace offerings to me don't sound seductive. That's not something that, you know, like, I have a peace offering. Oh, yay. I mean, I don't get it. So I had to study it out a little bit. What she's saying here, a peace offering in most of their religions, whether that's Judaism or even some of the Canaanite religions, the false religions, that they would have an offering where you would bring your meat offering and sacrifice it at the temple, and then you would bring it home and you would eat it with your family, and you'd only have a couple days to eat it before it goes bad. So essentially, she's coming to this young man and she's saying, listen, I have all this prime rib. I don't know how I'm going to eat it all. You think you could maybe come help me out? Okay, now does that begin to sound a little bit more attractive? It does to me, maybe just because I'm hungry. But that's what happens. It's like, man, I wish someone could help me eat all this steak. I've got so much steak. It's just all over the place. Man, could somebody help me? Okay, that's kind of what she's saying. And now some have speculated, some have suggested that in some of the Canaanite fertility cults and stuff, they would have these sacrifices, and then you would be required to engage in some kind of sexual interaction with people right after that. And so here is kind of this innocent sounding request by saying, hey, I've got all this meat and I'm required, man, what a pain, I'm required to engage sexually with somebody, you know, do you think you can help me out in this thing? And of course, I mean, that would be an interesting way of coming in and saying, sure, I'll help you out some way, and that's what's offered here. But in reality, do you think that she was a faithful religious person of any type? Probably not. She was just splashing it on, whatever it takes to attract the buck. Oh, you're into religious people? Okay, I'll be that. Whatever it takes. She probably hadn't done any kind of sacrifice. It's just a ruse. It's just to entice him. She's playing a game, and that's what he sees right through this. He says, look, she's coming here, and she even butters him up. She says, I have finally found you. I've been looking for you. And that's what she says here in verse 15. I've been seeking you diligently. No, she hasn't. She's been more places than Johnny Cash, and she's out there trying to just get whoever she can find. That's exactly what she's doing. And she doesn't know this kid from Adam, but he's got a fragile ego, and so she's after it. And she paints this fantasy for him in verses 16 through 18, where she just kind of, as the wife of a merchant, which is what it appears here. She lives in opulence, just a beautiful place. She just paints a picture of the bedroom, and just enough to whet his appetite, and his mind and his fantasy can fill in the blanks. And she lays this all out for him, and then just to kind of keep his prohibitions kind of at bay, in verse 19 she says, now listen, you're going to be absolutely safe. It says here, the good man's not at home, my husband's not here, he's gone on a long journey. I know it's a long journey because he took the bag of money. He's going to be back here in a couple weeks probably, because we know from chapter 6 that jealousy is the rage of a man. If he finds out then you're a dead man. We even learned that this last Sunday morning when God approached Abimelech. Remember how he had taken Abraham's wife, said that was his sister, and he said, "You are a dead man." That's what God told Abimelech, because you've taken another man's wife. That is not acceptable. Well, here she says, "Listen, you don't have anything to worry about. He's not going to come in on us because he's gone." And you know what? I doubt that that's even true. I'll bet if you were to pop in at the last minute, she would treat him like Potiphar's wife treated Joseph and say, "Whoa, this guy's in here. I don't know where this guy came from." I mean, she is just saying whatever it takes to set him at ease. So here this young man believes her to be the innocent devotee of some kind of religion. She needs him. She's prepared a night on Fantasy Island just for the two of them. No chances of consequences. And these deadly tactics that she is showing him haven't changed at all, have they? And we could explain that, how technology has brought in different things, but you know what? That the promise of anonymity, the just anything that you want has been very clearly laid out for there. But in the end, it's very, very tragic. Verse 21, we see the fall of the gullible because she causes him to yield. The word there, yield, means to receive teaching. She's schooled him, is what she's done. And with her lips, she's basically, one commentator said that she has raped him with her words. She has broken down every prohibition that he's had, and she has used her words to entice him and to come down. And all at once, verse 22, he goeth after her straightway. That means immediately. He just makes a decision. And he may be blurred thinking at the time, but he makes a decision, and he's going to go with her. And he says it's like an ox going to the butcher. It's like a criminal to the handcuffs, or a bird into a trap. He goes right into what she's doing. And in the end, it's death. He doesn't even realize at the end it's for his life. So that's the story. It's a horror story. It's an awful story. But it's also a story that Solomon says is very important. In verse 24, he says, listen, you need to determine to be wise or else you will be a victim. Over and over and over again, verse 24, he says, "Hearken unto me, attend to the words of my mouth." He's saying, "Listen, listen, listen. Do not go down her road. Roads go where roads go. There are roads that will end up in bad places. I'm telling you right now, you may not know where every road ends. I will tell you where this one ends, though, because I know exactly, well, what is at the end of this road." And he says, listen, he says in verse 25, "Do not decline to her ways. Don't go down her road. Do not go astray in her path. You are not strong enough." The very next verse says that she's cast down many wounded. He basically says, look, her front lawn is a cemetery of strong men. She has killed every one of them. You are not strong enough to stand up to this kind of temptation. You can't play with it because she will take you down. Her house is not a home. It's not even a house. It's like a checkpoint on the way to hell, is what he says. It's her house is a checkpoint on the way to a death chamber, is what he says that there in verse 27. And here's what's so tragic, is that these deadly tactics of the seductress here, the deadly tactics of sexual sin are obvious to the wise. Here's the father looking at this, and he can see it. He can see it and say it before it even happens because it's so clear what's going on. The tragedy of this horror story is that it is completely avoidable. It's completely avoidable. Now, how do you avoid a counterfeit or a phony or a fake or something like that, a lying, smooth-talking seductress? How do you avoid all of those lies? You know what's true. And in chapter 6, you know the consequences of adultery. We just talked about that last week. You know the consequences. You know how it works. Here we see a picture of it. We could back up to chapter 5 where he says, listen, if you understand not just the consequences of adultery, but in chapter 5, if you can understand the wisdom of a godly marriage, and how a godly marriage actually fulfills everything that both of you want in life and in a marriage and enables you to be a blessing to the world. I mean, good grief. He says, if you can understand the truth, if you can understand the good stuff, then you will not be a victim when it gets to all of these other things. The tactics of sexual sin are so obvious. They're very obvious. So what do we do about that? Well, if there are teenagers that are still developing brain cells, which most of them still are along the way. If a teenager doesn't have all of his brain cells, then borrow some. Borrow some from somebody that does. There's men that face temptations and things that sometimes act like teenagers that don't have all their brain cells, then don't act like that. There's ladies as well that we could talk about that fall or jump right into exactly the same thing. It's amazing how a child of God can just break down when it comes to these things, isn't it? It's rain. It's fine. We'll survive. Maybe. If we don't, then we'll go to heaven and be all right. It's amazing how a child of God can just cave under a temptation like this, sexual sin. And I'm not making this up because it happens, doesn't it? It happens all around us. It happens all the time. And we're always surprised when it happens. Just like this young man, just shocked when it happens and when it's right there. And there are unfortunately countless families that have been ripped apart because of this kind of stuff. And now our cars are being ripped apart by hail. And Satan doesn't want us to hear this. I guess that's what it is. I don't know. Sexual sin. We say, Pastor, have we talked about this enough? It's all through here. We've talked about it for the last month. I understand. But right now we're preaching through Proverbs. And Solomon, for some reason, thought it important enough to repeat it consecutively. I mean, through over and over and over through these. Couldn't he have just kind of spiced it in different places? He could have, but he did it this way. Evidently, it's a critical issue. And if you look around, I don't think any of us in here tonight have escaped the effects of sexual sin of some type. Every one of us have. And the tragedy of tragedies is that sexual sin is avoidable. It's completely avoidable if we will be wise. And that's why we need to engage in clear thinking. And we need to train the generation that's coming up behind us to engage in clear thinking and give a message for what is right and train for what is right. Because as dangerous as she is, as satanic and vicious and poisonous as the seductress is, even in our day today, she is avoidable. She is avoidable if we will be wise. You can see right through it. You can see right through the facade. You can see right through the lies. And if you know what Solomon knew, what Solomon heard from his father, if you can look through that, then you will be able to avoid all of that. And we can train our children to do the same thing. Let's bow for a word of prayer. We're not going to have an invitation tonight. We're just going to have a closing word of prayer. And as I pray, I just want you just to think about this in our own hearts tonight. I think every one of us could look at people that we are connected with, whether children that we're raising or people that we have an influence with that need to be warned from this. And maybe even in our own lives, there are some areas that maybe we've been a little bit casual about, a little bit careless about. We need to be very careful and be wise. It's avoidable. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank you for your word that you've given us. And Lord, I kind of sense the desperate tone in Solomon's voice as he is trying to do everything he can, including paint a picture to help his son understand this. And Lord, so many of us have seen people, and maybe even in our own lives have experienced the seductress, the sin of sexual temptation in some ways. And Lord, at the time, we're not thinking, and it just happens. And Lord, we understand how that works. But God, I pray that you would help us to be wise. I pray that you would give us the wisdom and to train our children to be wise, our grandchildren and those who we have influence with. Lord, help us to do our part, to sound out the warning, so that we can have a generation of godly families to follow, those that aren't succumbing to sexual sin, but those that are raising families and enjoying what a godly marriage is and being a difference in the world that we live in. We live in a rotten, sexually charged world that doesn't understand how any of this is supposed to work. I pray that we would be examples of what a wise family and what a godly family is supposed to be. And give us a voice when it comes time to warn those that are considering this path, Father. Lord, be with us now as we are dismissed. I thank you for the folks that are here tonight. I pray that you would give us safety as we return to our homes and help us to live for you for the rest of this week, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.